The following is a presentation of Sports Addict Media.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Sports Addict Media. Welcome to Two Cups to Joe, a sports show here on the airwaves. It is Wednesday, December 20th of 2023, 9:30 here on the East Coast. And Joe Cack Valley, Joe Sokoa, Owl Plant DeMore are going to bring us a whole lot of information here. The last time we were on was, of course, 2 weeks ago. We didn't make it on last week, but a lot changed since the time since we've been on the air. We do, of course, want to wish all of you who, whether you're celebrating Hanukkah, Christmas, you know, whatever holiday you're celebrating or about to celebrate, we would send you well wishes for you and your family for a happy and healthy. And Joe, the last time you and I were speaking, literally 10 minutes after we finished and wrapped everything up and said our goodbyes, Juan Soto was traded to the Yankees in one of the biggest headlines of the Major League Baseball offseason so far. And then, of course, not too long after, Shohei Ohtani signed the biggest and probably most complicated contract in the history of Major League Baseball. So there's a lot for us to dive into. We'll, of course, talk about Yamamoto a little bit later as well. His watch is underway. But, Joe, a lot in the last 2 weeks has kind of shifted here.
We almost got lucky with the Yankees 2 years in a row. You know, obviously we were on the air. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. We were on the air when Rodon had signed with the Yankees. So we were able to break that right there on the show and discuss it. And literally 10 minutes after we sign off, Juan Soto gets traded to the Yankees, and that deal went through. And it was funny because we were talking about how, like, now there was some skepticism, the physicals, and this, that, and the other thing. And, yeah, for that moment, at least for a few days, it was the biggest story. And that was something that I think a lot of Yankee fans were hoping just to happen, and it did. And, you know, then, you get the instant reaction to that. With, you know, they had to give up Michael King, probably one of the bigger pieces in there. They gave up a few other prospects and also gave up Kyle Higashioka, who's actually been with the organization since he was like 17 years old. So they did have to give up a lot to get Juan Soto for essentially right now 1 year, because the way the Yankees do business and the way a Scott Boras client does business, they are not going to be discussing a contract extension at this point unless they, you know, somehow surprise us before spring training starts. But highly doubtful that that's going to happen, and he will get to free agency next year. So it's basically the Yankees are sitting here saying we're putting our chips in the middle right now. And, you know, they are heavily, heavily invested in trying to land Yamamoto. They, along with the Dodgers, of course, are co-favorites now for this guy. And it's really going to be interesting because it then also ties in with the second, or, you know, the second thing that wound up happening that then jumped over the Juan Soto deal to the Yankees, which was Shohei Ohtani choosing the Los Angeles Dodgers as the team that he wanted to go to in a massive 10-year, $700 million contract. But $680 million of that contract is being deferred to the second 10 years. So basically, when his contract is over and he is done with the game of baseball, he basically now has his own Bobby Bonilla day where he will get paid $68 million every year for 10 years after he finishes that contract out. So totally insane, as you mentioned, Joe, at the top of the broadcast here, at how complicated that contract was. But this was apparently, by all reports, a contract that Ohtani structured himself along with his agents, and that was something that the Dodgers were okay living with, because, listen, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, yeah, they're going to defer and have to pay him $680 million, but by that point, the Dodgers will be 100% well into being able to pay that all off in one shot because of the money that they are going to bring in of Shohei Ohtani. And that even turns into, because Ohtani's getting only $2 million, he's going to make so much money in endorsements being in L.A. So, you know, we talked about it right before we got on the air, and even Al mentioned it. You know, he was going to go between that or San Francisco, but why would you go to San Francisco when, yeah, they haven't won in a little bit. They're trying to get back into the frame of mind, but their city is god-awful, run by the homeless. You know, why are you going to go there and you can just be in the second biggest market in the country? So absolutely huge for the Dodgers. And, of course, because of the way the money was deferred is that it also allows the Dodgers to stay competitive. And that's the other part of the contract that Ohtani structured was the reason why I'm deferring is that I want the Dodgers to still be able to spend the money and win. Like, this guy wants to literally win, like, beat the Yankee record and try to win four championships, maybe even five in a row. And he thinks that the Dodgers can absolutely do that. And now, of course, that brings them into the Yamamoto sweepstakes because they could afford that now because Ohtani deferred it. And obviously, Yamamoto would probably love to play with Shohei Ohtani, but it's really going to be interesting. He wants to play on a big stage. The Yankees have been heavily, heavily, you know, invested in him. You know, Joe, you said it a couple of weeks ago. You know, they are leaving the number 8. They left the number 18 basically vacant as a uniform number all of last year to show how respectful of the process this is going to be for Yamamoto. So it really is going to be interesting to see what happens here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and now, of course, Yankee Met fans are going to be watching this for the next couple of weeks. And we thought the free agent market would pick up a bit once Ohtani signed. But guys like Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery are probably rolling their eyes right now waiting for Yamamoto to sign. But it's on the precipice, Joe, of the biggest offseason the Yankees have had since, of course, that winter between 2008 and 2009 where they spent all that money on Sabathia and Burnett and Teixeira. And, you know, Hal Steinbrenner is – he knows that him spending money, the fans are going to reward that by spending money to buy tickets. And like we kind of hinted at last week with now Yamamoto being fully in the center now of what everything's going on, the Yankees have a chance to add two guys to their team that can be a big part of this organization for 8, 10, or 12 years. And that doesn't come along every day. So, yeah, it's going to cost you a lot of money. It's going to cost you prospects to get that done. But I think you need to make sure that happens because, Joe, you and I have said it multiple times, the window on, you know, your healthy, prime, productive years of Aaron Judge and Gerrit Cole is a finite resource. And the Yankees need to make some things happen because they're tired of kind of sitting back and watching everyone else, including the Houston Astros, celebrate in October when they haven't been able to.
Yep. And, you know, you look at it, too, in the sense of this is now also a year that Gerrit Cole's going to walk into and have the option to opt out of that contract at the end of this season. So, obviously, you want to keep him in pinstripes. You don't want him to walk because then that kind of resets everything for you. So they need to do whatever they can. But it's really interesting. You see a pattern here, Joe? What did they do in the winter between 2008 and 2009? You just mentioned it. They go out, they get two pitchers and a premier hitter. The Yankees are currently trying to get a premier pitcher along with a premier hitter because they already have that second premier pitcher in place in Gerrit Cole. So a lot of people are starting to make that stark comparison to 2008 that winter going into 2009, and they're trying to make that comparison now. So it's going to be something interesting to watch. And by all accounts, it seems as if the Yankees, even if they get Yamamoto, feel like they're not going to be done. Like they want to establish the bullpen. And also they've apparently, according to a report I saw it somewhere, have had internal conversations about the possibility of trying to trade for Corbin Burnes from the Milwaukee Brewers, who is also entering a contract year. And, you know, he actually, in the middle of last season, fired his agent and hired Scott Boras. So, obviously, he wants to look at the market and go and test the market. So it's really going to be interesting. But, yeah, this is an absolutely big offseason for Brian Cashman. We've been saying it. We've been bashing him all year. Yankee fans are fed up. It's been, what, 12, 13 years now without a championship. And you can't even sit there and say that they have been the powerhouse in the American League like they used to be. No, they are not. The Astros continue to have their number. Now you're kind of hoping with the Astros maybe kind of getting over the hill a little bit because their team is getting older, and now with the departure of Dusty Baker, makes you wonder and see what will happen with that team. But I think the Yankees feel like if they can pull these moves off that they would be back in the powerhouse position and can go on that deep run that we are so desperate for overall here in New York.
That's the one you have to hope for, because now, you know, you don't want to hear the possibility. How many times we heard over the years, Joe, of the Yankees being in on a premier player and they got that close. So they're going to go ahead and get somebody else instead. It's happened multiple times. Yankee fans are tired of being left at the altar by these big time acquisitions, these big time free agents. So if you especially have Yamamoto with the history of, you know, Tanaka and how good he was here, the good run that Hideki Matsui had here, you know, to continue that lineage of great Japanese players in New York is definitely going to be an enticing thing. So, you know, the next week or so, I mean, we've heard Yamamoto gets done before Christmas. We've heard after Christmas. We do know for a fact that the window closes on January 4th. Otherwise, he would have to go back to his original team in Japan. So we have a feeling probably this gets done in the next week or two, but they're going to be all, you know, waiting on bated breath and refreshing Twitter, X, whatever the hell you want to call it these days, until the news finally comes down, probably from Jeff Passan, because I think he's the one that's trusted at this point.
Yeah, that's the guy that everybody's waiting for. And then you have to look at the other side of things, and we'll wrap this conversation up with this before we get Alan here and we talk football. But, you know, this is also a pretty big deal for the New York Mets. Yes, they have been very active with trying to build at least a bit of a foundation there with the team, but kind of also trying to put some, you know, I would say second tier, third tier players around to kind of balance the team out a little bit. So they have been busy, but this is big too, and they have been very serious in this Yamamoto sweepstakes as well. I think it seems like everyone keeps saying that it's going to come down to the Mets and the Yankees battling for this big time free agent. You know, he had dinner at Steve Cohen's house just the other day, and that's what prompted a second meeting with the Yankees. So, you know, it's also a big deal for the Mets here, because if Cohen can land him, then Cohen's trying to right the ship from the mistake of obviously last year, and Stearns is really putting on a pretty good show here to start his first off season with the New York Mets. But if they don't get Yamamoto, then it's going to be interesting to see how Cohen pivots, and it's almost like, what do I have to do to get guys to come and play here? Because it would then seem like, and the narrative will be, that it's the same old Mets, and they still have that reputation of that no one wants to play there, even though the ownership has changed.
Yeah, because in today's baseball, we've kind of learned money isn't the only thing a lot of these guys are chasing. You know, they want to be able to be in a good place financially, but they also want a good place to have a family, and there's other factors at play. So if they feel like a place like the Dodgers or, you know, anywhere else, or the Yankees or even the Giants, if they provide a better option for that, if they feel like they want to set up somewhere else, Steve Cohen can offer $800 billion if he wants. Some guys you just can't slay. So, you know, I think we're starting to realize, you know, remember all those years ago, Joe, things were starting to, people were freaking out that Steve Cohen was going to break baseball. It was spending all this money. Well, he did that, and it didn't really work out. So the fact is, money is not the only thing that talks in the MLB nowadays. So, you know, we'll see if the Mets can finally break that schneid and get Yamamoto to come here, because it seems like, Joe, he is the golden goose for them right now. You know, one report saying the Yankees are going to go for a few other things if they don't get Yamamoto, but the report is if the Mets don't get Yamamoto, they're not going to try and go big game hunting again. They see him as a special piece, and if they don't get him, they'll pivot to kind of some more depth things instead of trying to move that money somewhere else.
Yeah, so like I said, it is going to be interesting. I know that there's definitely been a few other names. You know, there's been some reports that if the Yankees don't get Yamamoto, they might pivot and kind of put a super bullpen together. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, Josh Hader's still out there. Wonder if you take a look at him, because honestly, I'm really not too comfortable with Clay Holmes to be our closer going forward. And you get an arm like Josh Hader, yeah, he's kind of bounced around here. He was traded over to San Diego. San Diego can't afford him. So I'm just wondering why he's still sitting out there. But yeah, the domino has to fall. Like, we had the first domino fall in Shohei Ohtani. That then set the market for Yamamoto. Once we get through Yamamoto, I think the market will start to unfold a little bit with these other notable free agents that are out there. And, you know, we'll continue to monitor it. It would be interesting. It would be nice if the Yankees and Yamamoto maybe make this decision right before Christmas. Would be a fantastic Christmas present for the team that he chooses to go and play for. But there have been reports that maybe this decision might not come until at least the first week of January. So we don't know where we stand. We're going to literally have to do exactly what you said, Joe, and keep refreshing the Twitter and wait for that Jeff Passan bomb.
I would probably go get Hayter either way because you're losing Peralta in free agency. The Yankees need another lefty in that bullpen. I think if Josh Hayter doesn't mind shaving that long hair, I think I'd probably imagine they get all three.
No, but can you did you think that you were going to sit here on December 20th, 2023 and say that the Yankees are going to lose Wandy Peralta to free agency? I don't think anybody had that on their bingo card at all.
No, definitely not.
So, but we'll keep on top of it, of course, as we get through the holidays here. And this is usually the time when things would die down because all these signings would happen. But we're still waiting for quite a bit here. So only time will tell when things start to pick up here with the hot stove. So the heat is still there for sure. But we're just waiting for more of these dominoes to fall. All right. As we pivot now and we take a look here as we are now getting into week 16 of the football season. Unbelievable. We are now 3 weeks away from Wild Card Weekend. Wild Card Weekend will take place on January 13th. And, of course, when we do talk football, we bring in our guy, Albert Plantamora. Al, what's going on, man? How you doing tonight?
Pretty good. Just sitting here listening to you talk baseball.
And any quick take on that? Any quick take on the whole conversation that took place there with with the way baseball is kind of happening right now with Ohtani and Yamamoto?
I feel like it's taking too long, like with Yamamoto. I want to hear that the Yankees get him, I know we got that, that other piece that we need, but I thought it was between the Yankees and the Mets, and then you said LA. I'm like, where are they getting more money?
Dude, they have money to spend because this is exactly why Ohtani structured it this way. Oh, and by the way, the one other thing I forgot to mention in that contract, he negotiated that he can opt out of the contract if there's a personnel change between the co-owner and the president of baseball operations who pulled the deal off. So he basically secured the job of those two guys. That's amazing.
I heard they were talking about that on ESPN, something about that.
That's crazy. You imagine dictating the contract like that? Yeah, by the way, the co-owner and the president of baseball operations not allowed to be fired, or if they're fired or they change positions, I'm out. Sick.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, but they never even had it in writing. Like, LeBron James or seeing Aaron Rodgers with the Jets, they're almost like GMs in their contracts. But he got it in writing. He's like, I'm the GM too, by the way.
Yeah, he got it in writing 100%. And the other thing too is, and I can't believe I forgot it, and I just remembered it because of also mentioning that part of the contract, but apparently what put the Dodgers over the top? They had a video created in 2019 by Kobe Bryant. And the video was specifically having Kobe recruit Shohei Ohtani to the Dodgers.
Wow.
Makes you wonder where they kept that for all these years. They just keep it on a hard drive somewhere.
Makes you wonder is if the moment he signed with the Angels, the Dodgers said, okay, no problem. He's out in 5 years. Let's get ready to put our pitch together from that point. So I would not be surprised if the Dodgers were literally, from the day he signed with the Angels, started preparing for this exact moment. It's so sick. But anyway, now moving on to week 16 here in football. Like I said, we're 3 weeks away from Wild Card Weekend. It was not a good weekend for the Jets. They put up a giant zero as they get shut out from Miami 30-0, and the Giants got demolished by the Saints 24-6. Obviously not the weekend, especially, I know, Al, even though that the Jets have kind of been out of it, but they could have used the Giants to win. They could have used Chicago to win. Right now, the Jets sit at the 7th spot, the Giants ahead of them at the 6th spot in the NFL draft order. But we'll start there. I mean, did you expect anything different? And also the weirdness about how they were trying to continue to push, oh, yeah, Aaron Rodgers might return. I mean, after a 30-0 loss, and I know you were talking about it 2, 3, 4 weeks ago about how it would be stupid to even try to bring Aaron Rodgers back when knowing the Jets weren't going to make the playoffs, and now it's just turning into a PR circus.
Well, I mean, that was the most ridiculous thing. And to finally hear Aaron on Pat McAfee the other day say, you know, he won't be back is, you know, is a relief. Why would you bring him back? Even if he was 100% healthy and put him behind that line, I don't know if you saw my post last week showing Zach Wilson running for his life in the game. All five defensive linemen were in the backfield. Zach Wilson looks like a little kid running from the boogeyman. And all five Jets offensive linemen are turned around looking at the defensive lineman, chase Zach Wilson. And that's how bad our O-line is. It would have made no sense. You know, I expected a little more fight against Miami because one thing we've relied on this year and has been good has been our defense. And it's looked a little shaky lately. I think they might just be gassed, you know, like they're just tired and they're like, there's nothing we can do. I'm finally starting to hear the chatter. Actually, just today on Around the Horn or one of them, they were talking about, you know, what the Jets, and an article also on ESPN Plus that I read yesterday, both speaking about what the Jets need to do moving forward. And apparently, people are starting to say now, yes, Hollis got to go. And some are saying, well, you know, he lost his quarterback. Like, how much can you blame him for that? You look at Saleh's record since he's been a head coach here with the Jets, and it's bad. You know, I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it's well, well below 500. Mm. And, you know, the ESPN Plus article was saying that, you know, they shouldn't change him, though they should change Hackett. Everyone's in agreement Hackett has to go.
Yeah, but you heard the comment. I don't mean to cut you off, but you heard the comment on that same show with Pat McAfee that he has confidence in the general manager, the head coach, and the offensive coordinator. So essentially everybody then said, okay, their jobs are safe because Aaron Rodgers said so.
And that's what I said before about, you know, Aaron Rodgers being a GM. And that's one of my fears with him is he's going to hurt the team in the immediate and the future. So what the ESPN Plus article basically said was, maybe keeping Hackett on as like in an advisory role, you know, to keep Aaron happy, but to bring someone else in to call plays. Because there were issues even beforehand with him and Hackett, like in the play calling.
Because as you're saying it the question just popped up. Do you think there's a disconnect between Hackett and Robert Saleh, and maybe that's where the issue is?
No, I don't think Saleh has anything to do with the offense. I don't think he could do it if he wanted to. And I just don't think Hackett's very good. And he's shown it, not just here, but before here. Rodgers is comfortable with him. I think Rodgers kind of calls his own shots. But he's had, you know, issues with the type of play calling and stuff with Hackett, too. So I'm hoping that they don't let Rodgers call the shots because he is not the GM. He's the quarterback. You know, again, for the immediate and going forward. They also spoke about, you know, keeping Saleh on because the defense is, you know, performing well and stuff like that. I don't agree with that take. This defense is loaded with talent. You bring any defensive coordinator in and they can do a half decent job with this. And not for nothing, I feel like the defense actually took a step back this year where I expected a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
But so I would 100% clean house there. But that brings up the issue, what about Aaron, and is he going to be happy, and this, that, and the other thing. You know, that raises concerns.
Mm.
Honestly, if he were like, oh, if they don't come back, I'm not coming back, I would say bye. You know, I really would. I'm not going to mortgage the next 5 to 10 years of the team on, you know, a one-year shot with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
He also said he wanted to continue playing. I don't know. I'm sick with every aspect of this team, with the exception of the defense. And I mean, I could go down the line with going into the season with Zach Wilson as a backup after the Rodgers injury, not bringing anyone in, somehow thinking Tim Boyle was, you know, it, and then having to turn, go back, you know, hat in hand with Zach Wilson. I wish the best for Zach. I hope he leaves and succeeds somewhere else.
He needed to
come back. Everything's, you know, soured with him, but, you know, and they didn't give him, you know, any tools to win. So why does he get all the blame and Saleh's getting a bye? Like, oh, he didn't have a quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, Zach Wilson didn't have an offensive line. So, I mean, why is he getting all the blame, you know? So, and that was another thing. They went into the season with an offensive line, you know, that's about as bad as you could possibly be.
Mm. And then, of course, I think in that game last, you know, this past week, he got roughed up pretty bad. He's in concussion protocol, and so much so that his mommy had to come out on social media and come to the defense of her son. I mean, hey, listen, this is still a young kid and who is, you know, mom's got your back, bro. You don't mess with the mom. You don't mess with the mom. Unless there was a...
She
came out basically in defense of him, saying that he's still pretty banged up and he, you know, didn't really say anything to the coaches or the training staff because he didn't want to let anybody down. But apparently he got to a point where he was starting to get some blurry vision and, you know, started kind of stumbling a little bit. So
I wasn't at all. He got mauled.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not his.
Yeah.
You know,
so
he gives us a better chance to win. I'd rather see Simeon in because I'd rather see them lose. So.
Yeah. So. But yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But just quickly before we get to Joe and the Giants, looking ahead now to their matchup this week coming up here in Week 16, they will be at home. They're taking on the brutal 4-10 Commanders. The Jets are the favorite by 3 in that game. Is there really much to ask in the sense of what are you expecting from this week from the Jets? I'm sure you're at this point now where you would kind of root for them to lose to get the higher draft pick.
I'm expecting, you know, the defense to show up. You know, they're going up against a rookie quarterback.
Think it's going to be another snooze fest? Because didn't you say it a couple of weeks ago that the Falcons and Jets game was going to be a snooze fest, and it is exactly what it was?
Yeah. It won't be as bad as that because Arthur Smith is absolutely clueless as a coach in the NFL. But, The Commanders, you know, Sam Howell can be fun to watch it, and they can fling the ball around a little bit. I want to see the Jets show up. I'm hoping last week was just, you know, that Dolphins team is really good, and, you know, they're way better coached. And I'd like to see the defense show up and, you know, slow them down, but I don't expect, you know, the offense to do a thing. So hopefully we lose a 14-10 game again, something like that.
Well, at least... Then there's also the Giants, but also New York, my friends, is becoming an Italian city once again. The Italians are running the show here. And that is, of course, good old DeVito with the New York Giants. Chicken cutlets over there. Joe, I mean... As bad as the Giants have been, you got to get a kick out of this. We here in New York are sometimes blessed with these one-hit wonders that, you know, you're sitting there thinking, yo, what is he really going to do for us? I mean, is this really a joke? And then just goes off in like one or two games and it turns a city into a freaking insane asylum. I mean, you got to go back to Jeremy Lin and that whole... little Knicks run there. I mean, that's basically what this is right now. I mean, but everyone's jumping on board here, so much so that the dude's family had a massive tailgate with chicken cutlets, making sandwiches. His agent, even his agent, just embracing it all with the real Ginzo look on the sideline. And I can say that without offending Italians, but just... absolutely insane, has an incredible week against Green Bay, and then basically poo-pooed the bed here this week against the Saints. Are you in the Italian fever there, Mr. Joe Cacavalli?
I'm just getting a kick out of when the Giants lose by 30 to the Eagles on Christmas Day, and he's going to end up laying next to Luca Brasi sleeping with the fishes. I was a little down on this whole Tommy DeVito thing. I still am, because, of course, you know, the 1 week I thought maybe they would have had a pretty competitive game, I shifted them getting like 15 points against the Saints, and they still lost by 18. So, look, this is it's good for Tommy DeVito, and it's a good little story here. But, you know, the narrative has always been kind of similar to the Jets. You know, the Giants aren't going to make the playoffs. And, you know, I don't blame you as a Giants fan for enjoying this and jumping on the bandwagon while you can. I mean, it's hard to usually find reasons to root for a 5-win football team this late into the season, but, you know, good on him. You know, Tommy DeVito, who was playing pretty well in the preseason, and he got cut, he got sent to the practice squad. A lot of people wanted him to get the backup job over Tyrod Taylor, but, you know, if there's a silver lining to be had from seeing Daniel Jones go down the way he did and seeing Tyrod Taylor get hurt, you know, at least it kind of gives a little avenue here to see the Giants at least having fun as a team, and, you know, you create a local celebrity out of it, because look, they are in a stirred part of their schedule they should have been winning. So can you imagine if this team had won 2 or 3 of the games they got the snot kicked out of them at the beginning of the year, then maybe this would have been a lot more. I mean, I'm kind of just burnt out on the whole thing. I mean, obviously I've been, you know, part of the Italian fever for 27 years to this point. So Tommy DeVito is nothing new to me. I mean, he reminds me of a couple cousins and uncles I got from the homeland that, but this is this is going to be, you know, now that things have kind of come back to earth, we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll play the Eagles stuff, but I'm pretty checked out of the Tommy DeVito fever. I'm like Al, I want to see the Giants lose. I want to see them get a chance at a quarterback next year and kind of reset the clock on this thing.
So let me ask you both, and you know, Al, you can jump in on this. Joe, I'll ask you first. Do you think that there could be or would be any changes at the end of the season, coaching and general manager-wise?
I think the one Giants coach you can really see getting the axe here is Wink Martindale. I mean, their defense has shown spurts of being good and bad, but there's a lot of, you know, things coming out from the sideline about how Wink has lost the team a little bit. And, you know, someone's got to take the fall. We know Brian Daboll isn't going to get fired. It's only his second year here, and, you know, as good as he was, and how much he helped Daniel Jones last year, he's going to get another chance to run it back. You know, Mike Kafka, the offensive coordinator, we could see him get set aside. But I think the big change here is that you're going to see the Giants letting, you know, maybe Brian Daboll taking with the play calling a little bit. So I think going into next year, even if they bring in a de facto offensive coordinator, I think you're going to see him kind of call the plays here. So I think if Kafka wants to be, you know, the lead play caller somewhere, or wants to even try and be a head coach somewhere because he got some offers last year, I think that's something that he's going to have to go explore elsewhere. So I think Wink Martindale has a decent chance to go. You might see like a positional coach, maybe an O-line coach go, and Mike Kafka, I think, might be on the hot seat as well, A, because of the Giants' performances, but also I think he's going to be looking for a better opportunity elsewhere. So I think Dable's safe, Joe Shane's pretty safe, but beyond that, you could see a couple, you know, positional or coordinator changes here, but I don't think anything changes before the end of the regular season. I don't think there's any reason to, unless you lose like 70-0 to the Eagles, I don't think there's any reason to fire anyone before the end of the calendar year or before the end of the regular season.
Yeah. And they will be playing on Christmas, as you mentioned, a 4:30 game here in Week 16 against the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles are a favored team here, obviously at home, giving the Giants 12 points. So pretty big spread there. So obviously, big matchup there. At least a big game for, in maybe some sense, for some people, but certainly. You know, might not be the most funnest Christmas if you are a Giants fan. But, all right, let's get into Week 16. We'll take a look at the matchups, and then I'm going to let you guys kind of go off for a second because I might have to just go check on the baby. She started crying, but hopefully she settled down. All right, so Thursday, kicking off this very busy weekend as we head into Christmas, you'll have the Rams at home. They are 7-7 taking on the 7-7 Saints. Then you go to Saturday. We got a couple of games on Saturday. The Bengals and the Steelers go at one another in Pittsburgh. The Steelers 7-7. The Bengals are 8-6. And then the 8 o'clock primetime game, you got the LA Chargers. They will be home to the take on the Buffalo Bills, who are coming off of an impressive win last week. They're 8-6, while the Chargers are 5-9. Then we go over to Christmas Eve, Sunday the 24th, the 1 o'clock slate. You'll have the Falcons 6-8. They'll host the 8-6 Indianapolis Colts. The Titans will be home to take on the 7-7 Seahawks. The 10-4 Lions will visit the 7-7 Minnesota Vikings. As we mentioned before, the Jets are home. They will take on the Commanders, who are 4-10. The Jets are 5-9. Green Bay will be in Carolina to take on the Panthers and probably only have about 100 people in attendance. God, awful this past week. What was the attendance number? I know that was a big deal. Was it like 200 people?
Something similar like that.
It looked like there were 7 people. I don't know. Terrible. It was real bad.
Terrible. Then you have the Houston Texans. They'll be home to the 9-5 Cleveland Browns, who the Browns, Joe Flacco, leading the way here. Then the 4:05 slot, you'll have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 7-7 on the season. They'll be home to take on the 8-6 Jags. At 4:25, the Bears, 5-9, will host the 3-11 Cardinals. At 4:25, you'll have a big matchup here, the 10-4 Dolphins taking on the 10-4 Cowboys. And then the primetime game will be the Patriots, 3-11. They'll visit Denver to take on the 7-7 Broncos. And then you have the three games on Christmas Day. 1 o'clock, Chiefs are at home to take on the Las Vegas Raiders. The Raiders are 6-8. The Chiefs are 9-5. At 4:30, the Eagles, as we mentioned, are home, 10-4, to take on the 5-9 New York Football Giants. And then the primetime 8:15 game will see the 11-3 49ers taking on the 11-3 Ravens. That is a huge matchup on Christmas Day, and the 49ers have been taking out a lot of birds as of late. That is a tremendously big matchup for Christmas Day. All right, let's get into our picks. And this week we'll start with Al with your first pick. Gotta be prepared, bro.
Pull it up. I know. I was reading another article on Rodgers.
All right. You guys might have to just carry me here and read my picks off. I think we're pretty much similar, Al, with maybe the exception of one. I'm gonna go check on the baby.
Yeah, I saw that. Okay. All right. I got my picks right here. Hold on. I'm just pulling them up. Well, I can tell you what I'm not doing. I'm not going anywhere near the Jets and the Falcons, because wherever I am, each and every week, they're just the opposite. So my first pick, I'm going in division, on the road. I'm going to take the Lions -3.5. I think, you know, everyone keeps having the Lions at that 4 spot in the NFC, and because we have seen a little bit of inconsistency a couple weeks back around Thanksgiving with them. But they seem to be coming back into form, into what we thought they were. And I think they might really be creeping past, you know, the Eagles, who are faltering a lot, and Dallas, who looked absolutely dreadful last week. And then you look at the Vikings, who, on the other side, unlike the Jets, without their quarterback, are still in the playoff hunt. But they just don't seem to, you know, they can't seem to get consistent, you know, quarterback. Well, Dobbs came in and he was looking all right, and then they benched him because he had 2 terrible games. I don't think they're going to be bad. They have a lot of weapons. Addison is, you know, if it wasn't for Stroud, you know, offensive rookie of the year, and, you know, Justin Jefferson is back. But, you know, you need a quarterback to get them the ball, and they're not. And their running game has just been off. So, they're at home. But, you know, the Lions know them very well. They're a divisional team. Goff is, you know, is playing well again. He's starting to, you know, secure the ball a little better. Jahmyr Gibbs is really, really good. And then, you know, you add in, you know, David Montgomery. They're just a tough-nosed team with their defense. And, I mean, they're just going to put up a lot of points every week when you look at, you know, what they do and what, you know, with the exception of, you know, here and there, they lay a little bit of a dud. And their defense is tough, and I don't see how the Vikings are going to be able to keep up. 3.5 doesn't seem like a lot, so give me the Lions -3.5. And I believe Joe also has that pick.
All right, for my first pick of the week, I'm going to go with the Rams here at -4 on Thursday night. Look, they're playing some really inspired football lately. Matthew Stafford's back healthy. You know, Cooper Kupp was back to making plays the last couple of weeks. Puka Nacua had a good game. Look, this team has won 4 of 5. They are looking really good right now. In their one loss, they went to war with the Ravens on the road, and they barely lost in overtime. So they're a really good team playing well right now. And even though the Saints put up a good show against the Giants last week, I'm still not totally convinced for them. And look, for the Rams, this could be kind of a sneaky game for them. They can try and sneak into the playoff picture here with a win Thursday night and a convincing one. So I think the Rams are really hot right now. I really like the brand of football that they're playing, and I think they're going to keep things going here on Thursday night. So give me the Rams. I'll take them as my first pick at -4.
All right, for my second pick, also another pick that Joe has, Bengals -2, another road game, a team, and another divisional game. The Steelers are a real disappointment this year. We know what's going on with their quarterback situation, and, you know, now they don't even have him, and you have Trubisky, who is, you know, just a lost soul. And don't look now, but, you know, the Bengals are right there now, you know, fighting for that play, you know, one of those wild card spots. Jake Browning is looking, you know, like a very competent quarterback, you know, just like in high school and college. He's a winner. I'm a little worried with Ja'Marr Chase out, you know, losing that weapon is huge. But they've been running the ball well. Their defense is very smart and, you know, tough defense. And, I mean, the Steelers can't score on anybody, so I'm not sure how they're going to score on a good defense. You know, the Steelers would have to win this game with their defense, you know, T.J. Watt and, you know, forcing turnovers and stuff like that. Otherwise, they can't score more than, you know, 10, 14, 17 points maybe. And this Bengals team, even with Jake Browning, you know, should have no problems, you know, scoring 21 points. So give me the Bengals -2 on the road.
All right, for my second pick, I'm going to go with a team that kind of has their back against the wall here. I'm going to go with the Seahawks at -2.5 on the road against Tennessee. I mean, look, the Seahawks have kind of been in a tailspin here recently. They just can't seem to get anything right. You know, they're losers of 4 or 5, but last week, Drew Lock really lit a fire over them with that win over the Eagles on Sunday night. So I think this is their chance to really scratch their way back in here. They were in playoff position before. Now, not so much. They have to fight their way back. Geno Smith's probably going to be back this week. He was actually active for that Sunday night game, but locked up the start anyway. So I think this team is galvanized now. I think they really are going into Tennessee. They really need a big-time win here to prove they still belong in the NFC playoff picture. Look, the Titans are, you know, they're starting to get hot a little bit here, but I'm still not a believer in them. I still think Will Levis is a bit of a project at quarterback, but, you know, the Seahawks are going to have their hands full, especially with Derrick Henry as always. So I think the Seahawks, they really, really need a win here. So out of their own desperation, I think they get it done. So give me the Seattle at -2.5 for my second pick.
And my man Gino, and he was out last week, but hopefully he'll be back this week. I'm rooting for them because I really like him. My third pick, also another one that Joe has. This one feels like a sucker bet. But when I looked at the line and I was shocked. It's another road team, but it's the first place Jaguars getting a point at Tampa Bay. Now, Baker's been good for Tampa Bay this year. They're fighting for that playoff spot, and I'm rooting for them. And the Jaguars, I'm not saying they're not a good team because they are a very good team. At times they can be a little inconsistent, but they are dreadful to watch. Sometimes they're just very bored. They kind of laid a stinker last week, and I expected it, and I don't expect that 2 weeks in a row for them. It's a very well-coached team. You know, Trevor Lawrence is, you know, he's a gamer, even with his shortcomings. I don't see him, you know, having another bad game, and they're a much better team than the Buccaneers. Yeah, they're on the road, but they're getting a point. If they lose again, they might lose that division because, you know, the Colts and the Texans are right on their tails. And I feel like this is a must-win for them. They're 5-1 away, so, you know, they're a good road team. So give me the Jaguars, and I'll take the point.
And I think all three of us are rolling with that one because I'm taking it as well. I know Joe has it too. I mean, just for all the reasons you said, Al, and because, you know, Trevor Lawrence really rushed to get back for that game and last week, and it really was a dud performance for him and for the team. So I think with another week to kind of get healthy and get that ankle sorted out, I think he'll look a lot better. And Al, like you said, you know, this is a division where they have the pressure they didn't have in the beginning of the season. The Colts and the Texans are knocking right on the door. Of course, we'll see what happens with the Texans and C.J. Stroud, but I feel like this is a game they really have to win. They have to reestablish dominance in that division. I mean, assuming Trevor is getting back to being healthier, I think this is a game they should win. Look, Tampa Bay, they're just really, really inconsistent. And considering the fact, you know, even though they are at home, there's definitely going to be a lot of Jaguar fans at this game. It's not going to be a huge travel for them. So I think there's going to be a good mix of fans. And I think for the division crown, the Jaguars really need this win. So I'm going to follow Al and Joe. We'll go with the across the board at Jaguars at plus one.
Yeah, well, that's not good because when we all three of us take the same game, you know, it usually goes the other way. Okay, my third pick here. No, that would be – this is my fourth pick now. So my fourth pick, big line, I'm going to take the Bills minus 12 against the Chargers. Here's why. The Chargers, what's his name? Something Stick. If you watch that game against the Raiders last week, 63-21, one of the highest scoring games, you know, ever. It was 42-0 at halftime or something like that. That Chargers team has completely given up. And, you know, we know that, you know, they'll be in the coaching change after this year. I'm certain of that. You know, with Herbert out, it looks like they've given up on the coach, on playing. Like, they don't care. On both sides of the ball, they have completely given up. Then you have on the other side the Bills, who are out of the playoffs right now, and that would be a loss for us, you know, because they are a very fun team to watch. But they came in last week and they destroyed Dallas. And they said, hey, don't forget about us. And, you know, they can be inconsistent, you know, because of their sloppy play. But when the Bills are good, they're as good as anybody in the league. And the Chargers are just such a disappointment this year, you know, with all that talent. And I just, With you know, a bad quarterback starting for them this week again, they've completely given up on the coach. You know, 12 points doesn't seem like a lot. I you know, Buffalo might, you know, really run this score up, and it's 45-10, some crazy score like that. So give me the Bills minus 12. I'll be Joe's fourth pick. He likes them this year. I stay away from them because for some reason I always get screwed with them. The Chiefs minus 10. Versus the Raiders. I know Joe likes, you know, Mahomes and things like that. Division game with the high score. But the Raiders, you know, after the coaching change, they were looking good for a few weeks. But aside from last week where they played, again, that bad Chargers team, they've looked shaky. And I think Joe is, you know, banking on the Chiefs. You know,
I'm banking on they know, like, it wasn't a great week for them last week. So I think usually what happens is Mahomes does bounce back and this team does bounce back and wins convincingly. So I just think that they're going to be a little bit better this week. They, you know, they're coming off a win against the Patriots, but I know the Buffalo game was a tough one for them, so. And they played a really crappy Patriots team. So I just think that they know that they could be better.
All right, for my next pick, I'm going to go with the Packers at minus 5. I mean, look, I know they haven't really looked that great the last couple of weeks. They lose to the Giants on Monday Night Football and the Tommy DeVito coming out party. I mean, they got housed by 14 last week by Tampa Bay at home. If that doesn't galvanize you to win this week, nothing will. And they're playing a just horrendous Carolina team. I know they're on the road, but come on. Carolina wins last week. They barely beat Atlanta 9-7 on a last-second field goal. I mean, that was just an ugly game to watch. I mean, they're clearly in the full throes of a rebuild. You know, Bryce Young is having those rookie growing pains in the NFL. they're just not really good right now. And, you know, Green Bay, you know, they were really setting the world on fire. Jordan Love is playing a lot better. And I think they really need to regain their footing here. This is a get-right game for them, even though it's a bit of a high line, especially for a team on the road that hasn't looked great the last couple of weeks. But, look, Green Bay is, you know, they're coming off just two horrendous losses. If they can't turn around with this game, then they're pretty much toast for the rest of the season. So I think just out of pure necessity, just like I did with the Seahawks, I'm going to roll with the Packers on the road. I'll take them at -5.
Okay, for my last pick, I'm going to go with another road team here. So all road teams for me. Probably isn't smart, but I'm going to take the Colts. Once again, I'll take the points plus one versus the Falcons. The Falcons lost last week to one of the worst rosters in the history of football in the Carolina Panthers, who I don't know how they did that. As I said before, Arthur Smith is, I don't know what he's doing there. There's so much talent on the Falcons offense, and they are just dreadful to watch. Luckily, you know, they have a good defense. The Colts are fighting for, you know, a playoff spot, not just a wild card spot, but they're tied, you know, with the Jaguars and the Texans for the lead in the division. So, you know, they know maybe one of them gets in a wild card, but definitely not two. And, you know, so they want to get that division. And Gardner Minshew has been playing competent football. You know, they shouldn't be where they are with the backup quarterback. Jonathan Taylor will be back this week, and he just gives them so much more life than Zach Moss. And I just don't like the Falcons. I think the Falcons' defense will slow down the offense a little bit, but that Falcons' offense can't seem to score more than like 13 points a game. So I think it'll be a pretty low-scoring game, maybe 17-13, 17-14. But, you know, giving me a point, I'll take it. So give me the Colts plus one.
All right, and what was my last pick? I got to go back to this chat.
49.
The 49ers. Like, listen, again, this would be normally, and I said to myself, this is a game I have to avoid. I mean, this is just too good of a game. But just the way that they have been playing lately, Brock Purdy is an almost certain MVP finalist. Maybe is the MVP of the league, but it is going to be tough for sure. But like I said, I'm jumping on the wagon of that they have been bird hunting the last couple of weeks. So I'll take the 49ers in this game at home.
All right, my last pick, I'm going to jump on a line that I think is going to move in the next day or so. But, of course, the luxury of us putting in our picks, you know, during the week is that I can jump on this year. I'm going to take the Browns at -2.5. I mean, there's a pretty good chance that we don't see C.J. Stroud in this game for Houston. And, you know, Cleveland's defense is starting to play like they were in the beginning of the year. They're really starting to play really well. They held down Fields and the Bears last week. They had a nice win over the Jaguars. I really like the way that Cleveland's playing right now. And I think Joe Flacco, even though he's not at the peak of his game anymore, I think he's just good enough to keep this team believing and moving forward. And I think with their defense against the team, again, I think you're playing a backup with C.J. Stroud. I just don't think the Texans could be ready to compete here. It's going to be tough for them. I know Houston was one of the real feel-good stories in the NFL the first few weeks of the year. But, you know, without C.J. Stroud, I have a hard time believing they're going to win even though they're at home. So I think we're just going to take the team, you know, that's had better quarterback play as of late, has, you know, they're technically playing with a backup, but Flacco's a little more experienced at winning. So give me the Browns at -2.5 on the road. I think they get the job done against Houston.
All right. And that's all our picks. Let's get the standings up here. Al, if you want to pull that up, because I was actually in the middle of putting your sheet picks in as Joe was talking there. Where are we at with the standings?
Okay. Well, get those freaking sheets in by Thursday to tell everyone.
I know.
They're so annoying, right?
It really is.
So we had no picks this week, but the week before that, week 14, Joe Peccavalli was in first, 2-2-1. I was in second at 2-3. Joe was in fourth at 1-4. So overall, after 15 weeks, I'm in first, 40-23-2. Joe Sikoa is in second at 33-30-2. And Joe Peccavalli coming up in third, 28-33-4.
Oof. All right.
I'm like the Giants going on the run. That doesn't matter.
All righty. All right. So that's where we're at with football. So week 16, folks, good luck in any sort of betting you may be doing. And Al, as always, we thank you for taking the time here to speak with us for our weekly football chats. You have yourself a very Merry Christmas.
You too. Take care, guys.
All right. Al Plantamora there. We are at 10:23 here. Two Cups of Joe, a sports show. Joe Sacoa, Joe Cacavalli. Just thanking Al for joining us on that football spot. Let's kind of wrap up our show here and kind of shift towards hockey. And, of course, you know, it's been a pretty good season so far for the New York Rangers, who 30 games into this season, they stand at the top of the Metropolitan Division with a record of 22-7-1, 45 points on the season, a plus 19 goal differential. They have been playing really well. There was a little bit of a couple of games where they did not look so great. They kind of came down to earth a little bit where they had lost 3 out of 4, but now they have won 3 in a row and 3 out of their last 4. They avenged the 7-3 horrific loss on home ice at Madison Square Garden last week. They avenged that last night against the Toronto Maple Leafs with a 5-2 victory on their home ice. So the Rangers getting their revenge there and really have been playing very, very well. And they're doing this without Kaapo Kakko, Filip Hedl, and, you know, Shesterkin, who has not really been Shesterkin. You know, Jonathan Quick has been phenomenal as the backup for the New York Rangers, has not lost a game in regulation just yet, 9-0-1. Goals against under 2. He is having a fantastic season. Talk about a real good bounce back for him. And that is, I think, mainly or part of a good part of the reason why the Rangers are where they are, because Shesterkin has just not been playing very well. He does have a fantastic game in Boston. Very good bounce back confidence game for him. And then he has a strong game against Toronto, two powerhouse teams in the Eastern Conference. And they were able to handle both of those teams very, very well. The season started off not on a good note for the Islanders, but they have turned their game around a little bit. They're actually now sitting in third place in the Metro. They are, they did suffer a loss tonight in overtime, but they do get a point, so they move up to 39 points, 15-8-9, 32 games through their season thus far. So, Joe, the Islanders off to a slow start. Thought about possibly, you know, a lot of people calling for Lane Lambert's job, calling people for Lou Lamoriello to be fired. But it has certainly been a little bit of a turnaround for the Islanders.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a surprising turnaround. I mean, they win 4 in a row a couple weeks ago. They've had a couple of rough losses here, but, you know, they're now getting up there in the division. I mean, they're also doing this with 3 key defensemen for them being injured and on long-term injured reserve. You know, you're talking about them losing key minutes from Ryan Pulock, Adam Pellick, and Scott Mayfield, who all of them are probably going to be out for the next week or two. I mean, you'd think that a team that was in the past so much built on defense would be, you know, lost without those 3 guys, but they've actually been playing very well. Their offense has really ticked up. You know, Bo Horvath having a great year. Matthew Barzal is getting going with his scoring touch too. So you have to be really happy with how they've played. I mean, look, their schedule is not going to get any easier coming up. Obviously, you have the holiday break coming soon, but they do have to play Carolina in Carolina on Saturday, which, of course, is never easy. But, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised where this team has been going in the last couple of weeks. There, like you said, Joe, I mean, Lane Lambert was really looking like a guy on borrowed time here with the Islanders, but he's turned this team around. They really are starting to play like a more cohesive unit. You know, Horvat and Barzal together, we didn't really get to see too much of that last year because Barzal gets hurt pretty much right after the trade deadline when they brought Horvat in. So, you know, it's a great thing to see. I think I'm gonna have to get out there and catch a couple of games now because they're starting to turn some heads here. And, you know, just like you said, Joe, with Shesterkin not really having the kind of numbers we're used to seeing from him, you know, Ilya Sorokin hasn't been the, you know, netminder, the all-timer that we expected for him. You know, we expected him to be in the Vezina hunt this year, but he's been had some uneven performances as well. So seeing how their defense has been beaten up and their goalie hasn't been as good as expected, it's actually a good thing to see the Islanders winning these games here. These are games they were losing before, you know, tough performances in the third period, blowing a lot of late leads. So it's good to see them kind of flipping things over here, and you hope that they can get a little healthy here with the holiday break. They can start to shake off the cobwebs, and, you know, Sorokin, and he'll start getting back to his later form as well as we get through the season.
Yeah, without a doubt. And like I said, good little turnaround here. It just freaking sucks, man, that they have not played against each other just yet.
And yeah, they gotta wait till the stadium series, don't they?
I think. Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, February 18th is the stadium series is the first game.
Yep.
And then they're gonna play twice in like friggin' there's like two games like right smack, you know, once on St. Patrick's Day and then two games a week apart in April. So I don't know why they spaced out the schedule like that. I remember that happened last year too, where they just didn't play each other for like the first like half of the season. It was so weird.
But then watch, if we get to that point in April where it's the basically two out of the last four games of the season and it's standings implications between the two teams, watch how quickly those games become super important. But obviously we don't, as a Ranger fan, I don't want to see that. I'd rather them comfortably win the division the way that they're playing right now.
Yeah, I'd rather the Islanders be comfortably at least in a wild card spot as we get to that point, because I do not want to have to worry about, well, like last year where they were, you know, so bad for most of the year, and then literally the last like month they had no margin for error as they had to scratch their way into the playoffs. I want an easier ride this time as we get through the spring.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. And you know, we'll obviously keep track of these teams. Rangers have a back-to-back games coming your way Friday and Saturday on home ice, so that's good for them. And they're actually then going to be home on December 27th when they pick up. So it's going to definitely feel super nice, and I think that's a good thing when you're home, you're with your family throughout the holidays. So the Rangers actually are going to be home for an extended period of time now from Friday and Saturday playing back-to-back, and then have the Christmas break and then come back and still be at be home taking on the Washington Capitals on the 27th. So that's always going to be important. One other piece of thing we certainly should mention or talk about, because I think this happened right, well, was it 2 weeks ago? Has it been more than 2 weeks that CM Punk made a very highly anticipated return, 10 years in the making to be exact, to WWE? I don't think we spoke about that because I don't think it happened prior to our last show.
I think it just happened, and we mentioned it like really briefly near the end of the show. I think it was like the last couple minutes of the show we had spoken about, because that was like Survivor Series was what? That was Thanksgiving weekend?
Yeah.
So I think we had a show right after that, I think.
And, you know, for the first time in a very long time, Triple H elected to give, you know, thinking more about the wrestlers and being with their families, that this is a very rarity that this happens, but the WWE is like entirely off this week so that they can be home with their families for the holidays.
Yeah, they like pre-taped everything. I mean, that's what's been so good. I mean, he's really good. I mean, he's been on the road, you know. He knows what it's like to be away from his family for Christmas. I mean, obviously with the fact he's been married to Stephanie,
so, again,
man,
though,
I'm sure she was on the road with him.
But
still.
See, Joe, it goes back to even the brief conversations we had. It just makes me go back to the fact that he probably had these ideas and Vince shot him down. And it just seemed as if Vince was in like complete control, and then this merger happened, and then you know, and then now all this new stuff is happening with Triple H. So it's very interesting.
And this is usually a pretty dead time of year for WWE. We usually kind of have a bit of a lull, and then we hit the beginning of January, and you start going full throttle to the Royal Rumble. So, I mean, I think they've, you know, they work so hard through the year. Triple H is right to give them a little bit of a break here. I think they've earned that much, and, you know, you don't want to have anyone, especially getting burnt out and injured, getting into the biggest stretch of the year on the calendar for the company. So even though they don't have a quote-unquote off season, I think this is a good chance to let everyone recharge their batteries, or, you know, get busted for, you know, for weed like Liv Morgan did. But that's besides the point.
All right. Well, we hope everybody has a fantastic holiday. Of course, if you celebrated Hanukkah, hope you enjoy that. We're going to celebrate Christmas. Wish you a very Merry Christmas. We're going to celebrate Kwanzaa. Happy Kwanzaa. And, of course, you know, we will certainly try to get on the air next week. I don't think it should be an issue. I'm off from work, so it shouldn't be an issue. We'll try to get one more show in to wrap up 2023, maybe get some hot takes for 2024. So we will certainly be on the air next week and wrap you up for the 2023 year. On behalf of Joe Cacavalli, thanks to Albert Plantamora, I'm Joe Sacoa. You have been listening to Two Cups of Joe, a sports show right here on Sports Addict Media. Have yourself a very Merry Christmas.